Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, Mike.
We're waiting out here in California for the El Nino that they keep telling us is coming.
Is it going to dip down into the 60s for you?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're not so worried about the temperature. You know, bring on some cold is fine. We just want the rain.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps some snow up in the
mountains. That's right. You're still in the drought, aren't you?
Yeah, it really is rather profound. Anyways, a 60-year-old person, let's say who has atrial fibrillation, is on anticoagulation, and they need some kind of an elective procedure, let's say a repair of a ventral hernia. As we all know, the management of anticoagulation in patients undergoing elective surgical procedures is somewhat challenging. Basically, because interrupting anticoagulation for a procedure, even transiently, increases the risk of some sort of thromboembolic event. At the same time, surgery and invasive procedures of all sorts have associated bleeding risks that are increased by the anticoagulants that we give for thromboembolic prevention, etc. If a patient bleeds from the procedure, their anticoagulant may need to be discontinued for a longer period of time, resulting in a longer period of increased VTE risk. Of course, a lot depends on the specific anticoagulant used. For those people that are taking a vitamin K anticoagulant, such as warfarin, it takes several days until the anticoagulant effect is reduced and then reestablished perioperatively. The risks and the benefits of what we call bridging with a shorter-acting agent, such as heparin, are still unclear, despite the fact that we've been doing this for years and years. There are newer direct oral anticoagulants, for example, the direct thrombin inhibitor, dabigatran. There are also the new factor 10A inhibitors that have shorter half-lives. All of these lack a specific antidote, which raises concerns about treatment of bleeding and the management of patients who require some kind of an urgent procedure. So Mark's picked a poem for us this month from the New England Journal of Medicine, which helps us to understand much of how we manage patients and reminds us that in the past this has really been based on expert opinion. Thrombotic and bleeding risks may vary depending on the person, the age, the condition, and data from randomized trials haven't really been available to guide practice. So he's picked an article from the New England Journal of Medicine, 2015, volume 373. It begins on page 823, and it asks the clinical question, does bridging anticoagulation during invasive procedures improve outcomes in patients with atrial fibrillation who are taking warfarin? Mark, what did this double-blind trial show us?
So this is probably the best evidence to date about what do we do or whether bridging anticoagulation actually helps or not. Observational studies have actually suggested no benefit or even worse outcomes if you did bridging. This is the first one to take a large representative group of patients, 1,884 adults with chronic AFib. They all had at least one more risk factor for stroke, which makes sense because that means they were being anticoagulated. And they randomized them to bridging anticoagulation with either dalteparin, low molecular weight heparin, or placebo, which basically meant they went without anticoagulation for about 10 days. They excluded people who had a recent stroke, recent embolism, mechanical heart valve, thrombocytopenia. And they also excluded anybody who was undergoing kind of a really major procedure, cardiac, intracranial, or intraspinal surgery. They all had gotten warfarin for at least 3 months or anticoagulation for at least 3 months. They all had an INR between 2 and 3. And the protocol for bridging was kind of complicated, as it usually is. Stop the warfarin 5 days before the procedure. Start the low molecular weight heparin or placebo 3 days before the procedure. Stop the study drug 1 day before the procedure. Restart the warfarin 12 to 36 hours after the procedure. And restart the low molecular weight heparin 12 to 72 hours later, depending on bleeding risk, and continue it until the INR is therapeutic. So fairly complicated protocol. As you can imagine, apparently things can go wrong. The average age of the participants was about 72 years. They all had kind of a low to moderate stroke risk. Basically, the bridging group had their time without anticoagulation minimized. The placebo group, as I said, was without anticoagulation for about 10 days, typically 2 to 3 days before the procedure and about 8 days after until they were therapeutic again. Most of the procedures were classified as low bleeding risk. So as we think about applying this, we should probably start with their procedures where there's low bleeding risk. At 30 days, the risk of thromboembolism, arterial thromboembolism, didn't differ between the groups. 2 strokes and 2 TIAs in one group, 3 strokes in the other. The risk of major bleeding, though, was significantly higher in the bridging group, 3.2 versus 1.3%. So that means that if you were randomized to the bridging group, the number needed to harm was 53. So every 53 people you bridged, you caused one more major bleeding episode. No difference between groups in mortality, MI, DVT, or PE rates. Minor bleeding was also about twice as common in the bridging group than in the placebo group that where they didn't bridge. So bottom line, bridging anticoagulation in this study was associated with worse outcomes for patients with AFib undergoing an invasive procedure, mainly more episodes of major bleeding, number needed to harm of about 50.
Right, and a doubling of the relative risk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the numbers are still small, but makes you think. So if you were advising a patient who was going to have procedure, that was not life-threatening, sounds like you would advise them not to go with bridging.
Yeah, I think that, we have to, this is the first big study on this. There will be more, I think. And, we have to, use this wisely, this information wisely. But certainly, if it's a low bleeding risk procedure, and if they're not at crazy high risk for embolism, remember, they excluded people who were mechanical heart valve, mm-hmm. recent stroke, recent embolism, then, if you think about it, you're basically taking them off anticoagulation for 10 days.
Right.
You're not taking them off it for 3 months or something like that. The risk of embolism in patients with atrial fibrillation, it's probably in the neighborhood, anywhere, depending on their risk, 1 to 5% per year. So that's 1 to 5% over 365 days. If you take 1/36th of that number of days, it's probably a fairly small risk.
Yeah.
And then you've got the complications of the bridging that apparently, it's, maybe some people were dosed too high, who knows what. But, they apparently still had some of that dalteparin maybe in their system.
Yeah. Although I perhaps would disagree that that these aren't just 10 randomly selected days out of 365 days.
That's true.
Obviously, there's a bit of going on. They're more bedridden. There's a lot of
That's a good point. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, your point
still is a small percentage. Yeah.
One other quick thing, and it isn't in any way am I insinuating that the authors of this study did anything unethical, but it is really hard, isn't it, to do a study where you're randomly assigning people and taking one group and not providing them what has been considered to be community standard, which is the bridging, and asking them not to get bridged.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And, kudos to the investigators for doing that and the IRB for approving it. And, we learned something important, which is that if they've been perhaps harming a lot of people inadvertently who really didn't benefit from this bridging. Now, again, I don't think it applies to the people who are at high risk. I don't think it applies to, procedures where there's a high bleeding risk, necessarily. It may, and there may be as we kind of expand the bounds of this and additional studies are done, we may find that it may be even of more benefit when there's a high bleeding risk. We don't know that, though.
Thanks, Mark. We'll talk with you next week.
All right. Talk to you then.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.